Welcome to Open Sources Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. Happy April Fool's Day. I don't know, do we wish people that? Adam, I'm not even sure. I'm supposed to punk you, but since this is semi-live, I didn't really want to do that. So.
Well, I don't know. Do we... I mean, is that rule still in place that you can't do any April Fool's pranks after 12 noon?
I was never really familiar with that rule, but I thought it was just like a free-for-all all day, but it's difficult to prank people now. But
I mean, I'm wondering if it was like an April Fool's prank. It's like, April Fool's, you can't pull any pranks after noon, as I've still fallen for it 30 years after leaving the schoolyard.
Sounds like something that would come from the school system just so kids would behave.
It's in dire need of anthropological study, perhaps.
Have a happy April 1 anyway. That's my wish to everyone.
Hey, it's April. Mm-hmm. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And we sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be Ward 5 City Councilor Kathy Downer. And we're going to talk about patios and police headquarters and things, so stay tuned for that discussion. That will be at the bottom of the hour. Before that, we will talk about the rise of anti-Asian hate around Canada, in the U.S., and yes, even here in Guelph, there was a fairly famous local example this week. But first, it's a third wave, baby. Surf's up, I guess. That seems to be the warning of the day. We're recording this a bit early, so in about an hour or so our time, Doug Ford will be announcing an emergency break for the entire province, not coincidentally before a holiday.
Bit of a pattern there, wouldn't you say? It's always...
I mean, it's a pattern that drives conspiracy theorists nuts, but I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, 2 points make a line, not a pattern. So, I mean, if there's another announcement before Victoria Day, stand by. But it is straining credulity. I think this is one of those topics that we kind of goes all over the place. But I think I'm back on the side of the tracks that says Doug Ford is a buffoon that doesn't know what he's doing. And for a while there, I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because, I mean, who was prepared for a global pandemic? Who's prepared for shutdowns and lockdowns and, universal vaccine rollouts and things? But, I mean, at this point, over a year later, we have to admit that Doug Ford not knowing what he's doing is a feature and not a bug.
Well, I think it's fairly clear that I've never left that side of the tracks, but we won't let that get in the way of a good discussion. Yeah, we haven't seen the full announcement. There was a bit of a leak last night. I think it was on the CBC, whether all of those details are to come true, but it sounds like there is going to be a lockdown for some.
It was a full court leak because I saw it on CTV, and I think Global had it too. So it was one of those strategic leaks. So,
and it's probably intentional because It used to be, at least, I do remember when I worked in the supermarket that the day before Good Friday was the busiest day. It wasn't before Christmas. But I think these days and in these times, they probably want to get it out there because on days like this, people already start shutting it down. Not because it's April Fool's, but because it's, you know, the long weekend coming. Plans for the presumably non-existent long weekend, although it is going to happen, but it is weird that it's always I thought it was going to be Monday. I thought it was going to be Easter Monday, which a lot of people still are off. This is an extra long weekend for some, but this year all bets are off and everything is out the window. What isn't out the window is it sounds like vaccines are probably going to keep going all weekend. In the past we saw, due to holidays, the vaccinations being shut down. It sounds like they're thankfully going to keep rolling. Although I'm just wondering if they're going to declare today, as they have always been, or continuously recently, Doug Ford saying that there aren't, we just need the vaccines. We've talked about this before. It's getting to the point of ridiculousness. I did a little bit of math on the website, which I believe to be accurate, COVID-19 tracker. Have you seen this, Adam?
It seems... That's the, That's the Government of Canada one, right?
Oh, is it? Okay. I didn't realize that because it has a bit of a, let's just say, a community journalist feel to it.
Oh, well, I mean, there is a COVID-19 vaccine tracker on the Government of Canada site. I didn't know there was another one.
This is an aggregate then that's just kind of synthesizing numbers. I had no reason to believe that it was inaccurate because the link was good. And if yesterday's numbers were right, there were 600,000 vaccines in the freezers of Ontario ready to go. Now, I know some have said that that may be a bit of a false comparison to make, because I also saw that the amount of people vaccinated either yesterday or the day before was in the range of 80,000. So, of course, at that rate, 600,000 in the freezers will disappear quite quickly. But then, of course, there is the wrinkle of the AstraZeneca vaccines that our friends in the USA, God bless them, as Doug would say, are sending to us, which are arriving, and other AstraZeneca shipments. And AstraZeneca's reputation, let's say, is completely in the toilet, although people are still getting it. If you are going to hear anybody saying against vaccines who may have not been a doubter in the past, like a full-on denialist, there is lots of apprehension about AstraZeneca due to the situation in Europe, although not the UK, because it sounds like the blood clots that have surfaced hasn't happened in the UK that they know of, and in other places as well. So there was a very specific and small slice of people who had some issues, supposedly readily treatable, according to, I think it was in Germany they did a study. I read it on Deutsche Welle. So having said all of that, AstraZeneca is a difficult sell now. And Johnson & Johnson was yesterday. Some quality control problems with that one. So wrinkles. Oh, absolutely. And this is before it's even in our system between the feds, the province, and the health departments. So
yeah,
it's a tough one.
And we're supposed to start getting Johnson & Johnson by the end of April. And it's worth noting Canada is one of the only countries, if not the only country, to have all four of the current available vaccines to be approved for use here. The AstraZeneca, it's an interesting case because I think the UK has almost been is vaccinating almost exclusively with AstraZeneca. It's the local brand. But essentially it is, because it was co-developed at Oxford. It's just, you would think if there would be a place where AstraZeneca was showing serious issues, it would be in the UK, which has given out so many AstraZeneca shots, but that has not been the case. And I think part of the problem too is that, you know, again, we are watching the scientific process happen in real time, and sometimes it's messy and it changes with new data. And I think the talking point holds that, you know, the key is to get whatever vaccine is available to you. And then there have been stories about people who are like, oh, you only have AstraZeneca here. Call me when you have Pfizer. It's true, right? But the stories that are coming out, it concerns me that I don't think we have the scientific expertise that a lot of TV news stations, especially, to really dig into what the new developments with AstraZeneca mean. So you just see the headline, you see the 2-minute piece, like there are problems with AstraZeneca, such and such, blah, 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 blood clots, yada, yada, yada. We're doing it for 55 and over now. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of no one on staff who can just sit there for 5 minutes and break down the information, and because you got to move on to the next thing because it's a network newscast, which is, you know, still how a lot of people, especially older people who are trying to get the vaccines to, are getting their news. And it's just, I think it's a situation where the nature of our media is probably not helping, because it's fair to have questions, but we also need to create environments for where people can get their questions answered too, and get that you know, confirmation, and get that comfort that people are not going people are not going to get their shots and are then going to the morgue a few days later because it gave them a blood clot or something like that.
Yeah, and I spoke to somebody from a distance at work who was humming and hawing a bit. She's like, did you get your vaccine? We're literally yelling at each other. And I was like, no, not yet, but I'd really like it. And she said, yeah, I don't want mine. I won't say exactly what she said, but she was kind of hedging a bit. And I was like, you should probably talk to your doctor, right? Rather than try and learn from any exactly. media when we're doing these things in sound bites and there isn't really an ability to expand on it. I can give a brief UK report because I do know some people have been vaccinated. AstraZeneca, they're okay. I believe some people were feeling a bit off. The person that I know at work who got AstraZeneca, same kind of thing, like felt a little bit off for a couple of days, but is happy now at least to be vaccinated and clot free. So that's something. In terms of volume of vaccines, Canada, I happened to hear on the BBC this morning, they said Canada is number one in terms of our order for per population is five times over what we're going to need. Mm-hmm. So I think I've said this before, that we're going to be awash in the stuff very shortly, if not with these delays, then in the next month or two, there is going to be so much. I mean, I guess potentially people could choose the vaccine that they wanted, even though we're not really supposed to do that. Those that want to might be able to, but probably shouldn't. And there was that announcement, was it Tuesday, that 5 million more of the Pfizer, as the general would say, General Hillier, who was actually absent for quite a while. He made an appearance this week, but he didn't take any questions.
Because it's his last week. Yeah.
Yeah, so he took a couple of weeks off, made a brief appearance, not fielding any questions. But anyway, the Pfizer is going to be coming in droves. In June, there'll be 9 million doses of just that. So Canada has got it covered. There is some talk about it being to the detriment of other nations who really, really need it. If we've got all this in stores, you would hope that we would do the Canadian thing and distribute it to those that need it. Plus, also have to pay back the American loan, whether they want this AstraZeneca is another question, but I'm sure they will take it.
Well, the reason we're getting the American loan is that they haven't approved AstraZeneca yet, and I can't imagine that will happen with immediate effect, given everything that's going on.
But they're making it there, though, right? Like, we're getting American-produced AstraZeneca. It's kind of ironic, isn't it?
It is the irony, yeah. But
yeah,
the problem is that we're happening right now is we're kind of in this like sweet spot that's not sweet, but we're trying to get vaccines out. There's not enough. Maybe there's not enough vaccine to get this done as quickly as we would like. But people are getting bored. They're getting tired. They want this to be over, and I think we understand all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a matter of trying to sell people on just like we're almost there, and that is something that Doug Ford has, to bring this back around full circle, has pronouncedly failed on by with this opening up and opening up and opening up and saying we just need vaccines, Justin, give us vaccines, you dolt, and this is it. And like, I understand people's frustration, but people have to keep in mind everyone in Canada is probably going to get a vaccine twice over before most people in Central America, South America, Africa, Southeast Asia. You know, it's just a matter of time. And instead of like trying to buy more time, Doug Ford is out there yelling about needing more vaccines. And it's like, well, you know, that's fine. You can say we need more vaccines. But now it's becoming a matter of who's getting vaccines. Where are vaccines being distributed? We have cities fighting over who deserves vaccines more. We have different workers groups demanding that they be next in line for the vaccine. And we were talking about this before we started recording, that, you know, if everyone is first in line for a vaccine, nobody is. So we just need patience. We need the government's help to foster patience, whether that is like giving people the financial security for a couple of months in the form of you know, business supports for small businesses, or, you know, it's just like they're it's not just a matter of yelling about the vaccines. We are almost there, and the government should be focusing on how to make that transition as smooth as possible instead of having Doug Ford get up every day and yell about how Justin's not being fair.
Yeah, it is completely wrong. I don't care what your politics are, to try and score political points on this, and that is what they are doing. Mm-hmm. It was the same with Lecce on the weekend saying the feds really have to research into what's happening. I feel I've said this before about the they need to make sure that school-age children will be able to get vaccines, and they need to get on that right now. You are making the wrong point, dude. You are absolutely in the wrong lane.
Yeah, no,
100%. Right. We're at the point now. This is the third wave. The people that are going down in the ICUs and in the hospitals are my age, the average age. I'm not quite 53. That's who is being hospitalized now. The variants are rifling through society. A lot of teachers are that age. A lot of the workers that you named are that age. Rather than bickering about this, they need to get down to it. Shut up and get at it. And it is happening. A lot of it has been delegated out to health departments. I don't think having the Ontario registration and having local registrations is a good idea. It should have been either leave it up completely up to the health departments or the province, but not both. And I think that, from anecdotal things I've heard, is causing some problems in terms of people getting registered, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in the past, they would have just, if it was the 20s, they would have just lined everybody up outside City Hall and went bum, 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 using the same syringe. No, I don't know that for a fact, but you know what I mean? That's how it used to work. You wouldn't question it. It doesn't hurt to question things considering what has gone on historically with medical experiments and all that stuff. I understand that, right? Mm-hmm. But you also have to give the medical community some credit and the people that are on top of this, that they're going, you know, this is the way out. It's not the only way out, though. And I heard Scott Moe, friend of to jump provinces a bit and friend of Doug Ford, his comment on the news was, and it was something, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but it was something to the effect of, well, we're well past public health measures. Only vaccines will fix this.
Yeah.
That is absolutely incorrect. If you're just counting on vaccines to put this right, we're in trouble. Manitoba is in trouble if that's what they do. Ontario is in trouble if that's what they do, because if you feel you've just been vaccinated and these things take time to take effect, and you, as far as I understand it, you can still give COVID to somebody if you have been vaccinated and they have not.
Yeah.
There is a problem, right? So to say something like that, very cavalier, but it's like, how the hell do you know what's going on? I would listen to any medical person in Manitoba before I would listen to that guy or Doug Ford or Stephen Lecce or any of them.
Right. And I mean, the science is not clear yet, although I think there was some news that there was a study that said for people who've gotten both shots of the Pfizer are not passing on COVID, that the vaccine takes care of the virus, but it also makes sure that you can't spread the virus. So, I mean, there may be some good news about that, but it's still too early to tell you, but you're right. We do have to move on to subject number two, which is related, but also very horrible in its own right, anti-Asian racism. And we have, get this out of the way, we've seen this here in Guelph. There's a young woman named Aaliyah who she's of Filipino ancestry, but she was out walking her dog and a guy comes up to her and starts yelling at her and blaming her for things and yelling racial slurs. And then a couple of days later, she's driving and he sees her and gives her the finger. Guelph police did catch up to this person and gave him a stern talking to. But I think it's understandable that there are a lot of people in our Asian community here in Guelph who are on edge, as well as a lot of people in Asian communities everywhere, for that matter.
Oh, for sure. And that's, people were surprised that this person wasn't charged with anything. And when it comes down to it, the law in these instances, particularly with hate speech and that kind of thing, is actually quite weak. Sadly, it takes some kind of altercation for people to be charged, and that is heavily problematic. It sounds like a good Samaritan came to her aid, and that's something that we all can do and learn how to do. There's plenty of resources for that, known as bystander intervention. When you see something going like this on, what to do and how to proceed. But you must have heard that. I'm sure you saw the story of the day before about the woman in New York City. Getting her head kicked in, essentially, and the security guards that were in the luxury condo or whatever building it was there just kind of shut the door because it's New York City. that is exactly what not to do. But there's, it's up, it's way up. It's not, well, you can blame Trump to some degree. A lot of this was driven by the Trump era, and this is one of the reasons to be thankful that he's gone, because the rhetoric was all China virus, China, 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 right? That not help.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether he thinks he's a racist or not, that is a racist line to take. Hate, in particular, it's 10 times here. I think in the States it was something like 3,800 incidents of direct Asian hate. A lot of it also with an element of misogyny. It was women that reported 68% of the attacks in the U.S. I'm sure there's a similar parallel here. Plus, of course, with the mass shooting,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of overlap and, I guess, intersectionality on this in terms of gun control, racism, faith, all kinds of other things cross over there. I guess we can't get into that too much, but that is what's prompted this, as with George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, that is what prompted the demonstrations in the major centers on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
In the West and in Canada as well. So
yeah, to attach myself to what you were saying about the victims seem to be Asian women. I was listening to an interview with Claire Jean Kim, who's a professor at UC Irvine, and she's a professor of Asian studies. And somebody asked her about, this case in New York City with this. Like, I mean, if you've seen the video of that, it's vicious. Like, you can you can practically hear the when the boot makes impact to her head and repeatedly. It's it's shocking. She makes the point that, the reason why we're seeing, and we are seeing it here in Canada too, it seems to be particularly older Asian women who are being targeted, and it's a power dynamic thing, right? You can walk up to a 60-something, 70-something, 80-something-year-old Asian woman, and if you're a male of a certain age and of a certain physical quality, you can feel pretty assured that you can do whatever you want with this person physically, and this is kind of what we're seeing. There's a power dynamic too that is not, again, this intersectionality we're talking about, not too dissimilar from misogyny or from elder abuse. It's kind of like all of these hate crimes kind of rounded up into one thing, because it's racial, it's misogynistic, it's ageist, it's all of these things. And I think that's partially what's disturbing about all of this, because in the case of Guelph here, it is a young woman. And I don't know what the person who accosted her looks like. I have a picture in my head of someone who is big and someone who may see a small young woman and feel that he can push her around. And it's impossible to ignore all these dynamics, because they all seem to be at play. And it's worth noting too, the man they arrested in New York City for savagely kicking that woman is black.
Mm-hmm.
So it this isn't just like white on minority racism too. There's an element of racism in other minority communities, people who are attacking. And I think there was a case in Vancouver too of an Asian Canadian server who had coffee poured on her or something by someone, and those people were they were not East Asian, but they were like Southeast Asian or perhaps Hispanic. It's just remarkable that there's no fraternity amongst minorities for Asian people, and that's probably partially why we've seen those demonstrations. It seems like we're in a moment where everybody is kind of ganging up on Asians.
Because some of the, what was the percentages in, I'd mentioned the amount in the USA total, 1,300% increase in New York City alone, over 700% increase in Vancouver, which has a large and well-established Asian community, let's say. But the roots, some of the tone you hear is of surprise, like, oh, I can't believe this is a problem. The roots of this are really, really deep.
Sure, yeah.
And when they talk about, when it is discussed about institutional racism, and there are certain elements or people will say, no, that's not a thing. The roots of anti-Asian racism in this country, going back to the 20s and earlier, but the 20s in particular with the the Chinese Immigration Act, as it was called, also known as the Exclusion Act, mm-hmm. when there was a head tax specifically put on people coming from China, from a pure racist root, that legislation came into being in this country around 100 years ago, right? So mm-hmm. it's deep. And also, when you think about it, because I heard George Takei speaking on this. So within living memory, Canada and the U.S. had rounded up all of their Asian, particularly Japanese citizens, put them in internment camps. And that also included, well, not only George Takei, who was very young, David Suzuki, mm-hmm. considered a national treasure, was mm-hmm. somebody who was interned as a young person born in Canada. I want to say Nisei. Is that right?
I think Nisei that's right.
Is second or first generation born outside of Japan. They actually have a name for it because there are so many people. So there's somebody, a well-known person, was interned simply because of the way he looked like. And also, you know, there was a world war on, but that's he was born here. As with the person in the South End, the young woman in the South End was born here. So mm-hmm. she's a Guelphite, right? She's from Guelph, and yet somehow, well, we know how, but it's like...
right.
This whole, go back to where you came, it's the dumbest default racism of all time, of all kind, particularly when, as you say, like it sounds like this, I don't know anything about this person that they gave the talking to, but by the sounds of it, they are not originally, let's just say they're not originally from Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
Had a French accent, I think it was specified. It doesn't matter. So it's like this goes across all levels. Like you say, it isn't a straight on just like the type of hate that came out of 1923, let's say, right? This mm-hmm. is, it's more overarching than that. And that's heavily problematic.
Well, at the end of the day, I mean, unless you're an indigenous person, saying go back to where you came from is kind of empty and hollow. All right, we're going to have to take a quick break here. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Cat Records pick of the week. Our friends at Royal Cat Records making the news this week, and thankfully things are working out for them. Anyway, that is the Big Little Record Store, 21 Mac Donnell in the downtown. And the song was 1946's newest hitmakers, Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians, featuring Carmen Lombardo on vocal. And the song was Seems Like Old Times. And if you're wondering what the heck that's all about, just Google Jason Kenney Grandfather, or use the search engine of your choice, and prepare to have a good laugh. It's not an April Fool's joke, but should be.
Are we really assuming that people are going to go to Bing?
Go to Bing, man, because Bing was big in 1946 as well, as he is in 2021. Ba-ba-da-ba-ba.
I wonder if someone at Microsoft was like a really big, big Crosby fan, and that's where the name comes from.
It could be, or it's Bing. Like, wasn't it Trump used to go Bing and then Bing and then? I think it's more like that. I don't know.
Well,
it's very American sounding to me. Whatever it is, Bing.
Trump used to say
get a result.
Like tippy top. So who the heck knows?
Truly, yes.
We shouldn't joke because we might be sending Q dispatches. Anyway, watch Q into the storm for insight into that. Anyway, speaking of local stuff, we talked to Kathy Downer, the Ward 5 city councilor, earlier this week. Predominantly, this is a conversation about the patio decision that was made at Monday's council meeting. There will be weekend closures downtown for the the dining district, as it was called last year. It's not going to be a full months-long closure like it was last year. That is a decision that made some people happy, made some people kind of grin and bear it. But we will get into that with Councillor Downer. We also talk a bit about anti-Asian racism in Guelph right off the top, since we just finished talking about that on between Scotty and I. And then we will also talk about some other stuff in the news this week. So why don't I just reach over here to my tape machine and press play on that interview.
Ka-chunk.
Ka-chunk. Well, Kathy Downer, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on again. Always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. I want to start with, we were ostensibly going to talk about Patias, but I mean, this is in the news too, and we just finished talking about this on the show. But the case of Miss Aaliyah Sebang, who is a Guelphite and was out walking her dog, and somebody pulls up and starts yelling racial stuff at her. I think we all in Guelph like to think we're above that stuff, but it shows that it can happen here too. And since you are in a position of authority as a city councilor, I thought I would get your thoughts about, or your concerns about anti-Asian racism and it showing itself so horrendously in our backyard.
Yeah, well, you know, I think racism is probably alive and well in Guelph. I don't think we should be in denial about that. And, you know, any kind of racism is of concern for me. There's a permissiveness around it sometimes. And I'm glad that they were able to identify who it was. It's interesting that you mentioned this opening the show, because I'm involved in a project in Kitchener. I volunteer as a mediator with Community Justice Initiative, so as a community mediator, and they're doing a Sula project, which is started out as a project about anti-Islamophobia mediation and how you can use restorative justice instead of, you know, the criminal system to deal with these, because it's educational, it's transformative. And then they broadened the program to include all sorts of racism. And I sort of wonder if something like that here would be good as well. It's in a partnership with Community Justice Initiatives and the Coalition for Muslim Women in KW. But so it's, you know, I'm just in the middle of doing the training for that. And it sort of had me thinking about, well, you know, it'd be great if they could expand the program into Guelph. They do services here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's disappointing. And you really need to get to the root of it. I mean, you know, without doing that, you get repeat offenders and a warning, like is what I heard he received. And well, without the educational components that need to go along with that,
yeah,
and awareness raising, it's not going to be very useful in his future.
No, and it doesn't stop the next one either.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sad, and I don't expect us to solve racism or anti-Asian racism, but I mean, I think it's too important to ignore. And since we had you here, and I actually forgot you are a famous mediator. So you
famous
in the mediation community. Well, I mean, mediation's a good segue into talking about patios, because there was a bit of mediation. Yeah. It was you and James who were kind of the middle road, and we talked to James a couple of weeks ago. But for you, what was the difference? I mean, you voted against the seasonal closures, but you voted for the weekend closures. This was at committee, of course, as well as council meeting. But I mean, where was that difference for you? What was your thinking on that?
The difference between the committee of the whole and council and shortening them, or around?
About closing seasonal and closing just on weekends. Why was the one good and the other not good in your original opinion?
Well, I couldn't see closing them 20, like 7 days a week. It is, you know, last year, you can't deny there were problems with that around delivery, around transit. Garbage pickup, there was all kinds of issues around having it 7 days a week. And like many people saw, there was so many times during the week that it didn't, there was hardly anybody there, particularly as we got into cooler weather. And so I just thought that it really wasn't really useful or necessary to do it that way. I mean, last year was a pilot, and I like what Leanne said. This is like phase two pilot. It's, you know, it's like, okay, let's try this. People really liked the patios without, I mean, we're still having patios, right? And they're now being extended. People really liked the road closure, as some people say. We shouldn't say closure. We should say open to pedestrian area. Mm. And they liked being in that sense, particularly people with families who didn't like having their kids next to the traffic. So allowing for that experience in what would normally be is considered one of the busiest intersections in the downtown that has most of the restaurants that concentrated. I think I said this at council, but is the most restricted in what they can put in patios there because of the turning radii of trucks and buses and things like that. Plus they have planters on the sidewalk. So they're somewhat restricted in being able to use the patio program, the seasonal patio program. So it, like I said, I think it's worth trying this for a year. I only want to try it for the year and see how it goes. I mean, well, I'm sure we'll need further tweaking. I wasn't keen going into September on it. With the students returning, and some people were concerned about, you know, the party that might happen when the students concerned, but I was more concerned about students coming back, learning the transit system again, transit getting busier and having that disruption. I understand that there's mitigation funds for disruption, but it's still a disruption and it just keeps it consistent. And it's important that we grab those transit riders when they come back and keep them.
I think that's, and I didn't think about this with like half my brain always dedicated to transit issues. There is going to be like a whole class of U of G students who will land here. I mean, assuming of course in-person classes resume to any sort of majority status, but you know, there will be a whole class of U of G students who arrive here having never taken a Guelph Transit bus.
Right. That's why, like, I wanted Labor Day cutoff. You don't want to frustrate them right out the door. And, you know, whether they have passes or not, they're going to use transit and they're going to use it to either get downtown or some of them, you know, they live elsewhere. So I think it's important that we allow for that. I know Councillor Gibson was saying that he thought the Safe Semester program would take over from it, but actually the Safe Semester program doesn't close the street until 10 at night, and it's not for patios, it's for safety reasons, right? So yeah.
And if I remember correctly, Wyndham is still open during Safe Semester. It's just McDonald and Carden they close off.
Actually, I thought it was Wyndham and McDonnell.
I thought there was still a through, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think there is.
Maybe we'll look that up offline.
We'll both do our homework on that.
Yeah. Was this a no-win scenario? Because there was such there was such passion for the seasonal closure. There was such passion for people who like were deeply, I guess, affiliated with their individual issues.
There's just so many competing interests. It's not just about the economics in the downtown and what's fair and not fair. There's transit, there's city services of garbage, there's delivery. And then you have a public that seemed to, those that used it overwhelmingly enjoyed it, and it brought them, it did bring them downtown in an experience that they hadn't had before. They hadn't had a draw to the downtown like that before. And that is important. And they like that sense of being there and you know, you know, we still have to watch for the safety issues around COVID, but I mean, it, as one of the delegations mentioned, nobody was ever charged. There's a security person there making sure everybody is safe that we probably wouldn't have if it was just a seasonal Paddle Bureau program. So I do see it as it was difficult to find that sweet spot. There's so many people that have varying views, and all of them have good arguments as well, you know, and I understand, you know, some of them that mentioned, I think it was Phil or June, like, you don't want those restaurant owners to get a sense of entitlement around the public space in front of their establishments. So, you know, that's why I like the 1 year too, because that shouldn't happen either. These are public spaces, they're publicly owned lands. You know, why would it be free for 3 years? Why would the city, you know, want to fund that, you know, to the tune of, you know, $300,000 for a year, for 3 years for that one intersection? So I think that's, you know, during COVID, I can understand that, but I don't know if that's something we want to continue.
Let me phrase it this way. Last year, we rolled it out. We said, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good, which I think it was used quite a bit. So we rolled it out. We made it happen. Was there not enough thinking last year and maybe too much thinking this year? Were we maybe too focused on trying to account for all the scenarios when we weren't thinking enough about the scenarios last year?
Oh, definitely there wasn't enough thinking last year. And I don't blame staff for that. I mean, this was a unique situation. There was a lot of political pressure to make it happen. I mean, staff didn't want to do it. If you recall, it was particularly earlier. And you see a bit of that this year by council saying we want it earlier. And I think there wasn't a lot last year. And no, I think staff have thought about it really well, but they came up with three neat, you know, succinct options. And, you know, the options are probably, you know, there's probably a fourth and fifth and sixth option that we might have strived for, but it's not perfect again. I mean, whether I'd support the same thing next year is a question, because, you know, like I said, we'll see what those mitigations to transit look like. I mean, we're going to know.
Right.
That whether you're still going to be able to get your bus, you know, transfers on time. And
right. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about the mayor's comments before the vote about whether or not, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but he basically said that council needs to do some searching within itself to see if they are as reflective of the community will as it might appear. I think he was specifically talking about how there was a petition with about 5,000 signatures in favor of the seasonal closure, and we still get weekend closures. You know, how do you feel about the mayor's comments there?
Well, there's 130,000 people in Guelph. So I thought it was inappropriate. I just think that council is there representing everybody. And, you know, we all have different points of view. And we all, you know, have come with our own biases, you know, as well, and our own filters. And, you know, I probably could have argued any different position on this issue. And it was interesting. I thought every single counselor really listened to every different point of view, and some of them landed in different places. And I don't see anything wrong with that. And I think that's healthy. If we'd had slam dunk votes of unanimous, then we would not have been representing our constituents, because there was such a divergence of views and people were very passionate about it. So I actually believe the opposite is true. And I thought that was somewhat uncalled for. And I mean, like, you could have accused him of not taking into account transit users or other things, right? I mean, a disconnect with them, but, you know, there's no need for that we all, everybody represents, and it's healthy, diverse opinions, and it's healthy. It's really healthy. That's what democracy is, you know?
I wanted to ask about one specific delegation, which was from Meg Thornton, or Thorburn, I should say, who was the retired epidemiologist from the U of G. I know me just sort of sitting here watching the meeting, I sort of felt a chill when she was talking, you know, owing to her, you know, expertise and, you know, the fact that the variants are going to be a big issue and they already are a big issue. We don't know what it's going to look like. There's, you know, people are saying that the usual COVID safety restrictions aren't going to work in the case of the variants. You know, how are you feeling in that moment?
Well, I know Meg. She's a marine epidemiologist. And I thought, you know, she spoke very well to the issue. She also lives on Arthur Street, which was getting cut through traffic. But I also, you know, she brought her expertise to the table very well. And I don't think, I just thought that we have Dr. Mercer, who's our public health official, telling us, and, you know, she was asked, Dominique had asked her at a previous meeting, what do you think of the patios? And she supported them. She thought they were more enforceable. You can see where people are. You'd rather see people outside together than inside. This is a better plan. So, she was positive about it. And so I think that's, you know, to hear something opposite, well, that it was unsafe. And again, for me, the contradiction of, well, people lining up at any one of those establishment at the intersection when the roads aren't closed are going to be a far bigger problem when that intersection is closed and they've got space to line up. So I was a little concerned about that sort of perspective. But, you know, she's a delegation. She can, you know, she brought her expertise to the table and I appreciated her view. And there is real concern about these variants. And the other thought I had, and I think some of us had, that, you know, if this gets bad, we're going to be back in lockdown and this is all going to be a moot point. Like, you know, if the patios aren't going to be any bigger with this road closure. And she was supportive of the patio, seasonal patios, the way they were going to be, but she didn't support the road closure issue. So it seemed kind of contradictory to me, but she brought her good, you know, she's a reputable scientist in the community, and it was good to have her to come forward and speak.
Did you use the dining district last year? Did you get a chance?
I was at Electra a few times. It never stopped me from, that there's other restaurants I really like in the downtown. So I used other patios, but not necessarily those in that area. And I don't like the term dining district either. It's the whole downtown's a dining district. It's more like a pedestrian area.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of stuff and that was discussed at committee too. The whole, you know, we're trying to create a thing, not just about dining and patios, but in trying to create like sidewalk shops and pop-up shops and these other things. I mean, there's a whole nomenclature and stuff that has to be worked out to make it a bit more inclusive than exclusive, which I mean may get to some of the criticisms as well. Before we run out of time, I do want to address the new controversy. Jasper,
what's that?
There are so many. Jasper is taking the city to court about the police headquarters. I realize there's legal stuff that you can't talk about, but I mean, people are freely making Urbicon comparisons, and I know you weren't on council at that time, but I mean, is that fair?
Probably not. I mean, again, I can't talk about the legal aspects of it, but I don't I don't believe it's a good comparison. Just it's different reasons, I think, and some of it might be similar. I mean, you know, it's still a major project where we're getting sued for, right?
And I mean, there was also, and this gets maybe a bit further from the legal stuff and more to the city hall stuff, but I mean, after Urbicon, there were a series of measures that were put in place about, you know, making sure we do the quarterly reporting, making sure every nickel and dime is accounted for. This wasn't supposed to happen with the police headquarters. It happened anyway. We're now looking down the gauntlet, and this is coming up at committee next week, the debt funding for South End Rec Center, the new main library. People are maybe sweating that we didn't learn those lessons. I mean, no matter how well they fit into this situation or not, but I mean, do you feel assured right now that the city can handle these big infrastructure projects? And I mean, what can be done differently?
Well, you know, they tried to do it differently with the police headquarters. And, you know, we had a project manager, and, you know, whether, you know, that doing that would make it any better or not, I'm not sure. It clearly, maybe it did. I mean, maybe we'd be in worse trouble if it wasn't for that. And, you know, who knows on Urbicon, I forget how much it cost us. Was it $6 million or something? Mm-hmm. Who knows what it might have cost if we hadn't, you know, done the stop work order. So there's those unknowns, right? Mm. So there's a risk in those things, but you know, is there a cost avoidance down the road by, you know, so actually were we actually being better looked after? It's hard to say, you know. I mean, you could look at it from different views. Certainly, you know, yeah, I'm concerned, you know, about Baker Street. It's a huge project, and it's a difficult site. We haven't even started digging yet, you know, so it's all those bodies, right? You might find. And it's, you know, and we have a partner, a private partner, and a major public asset to be built, the library. So, you know, yeah, I have, you know, I have concerns, you know, moving forward with that, and, you know, won't be happy until we get a shovel in the ground, as we, no matter what the votes are. So I'm hoping we can get there.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to sort of wrap this up in a bow. I mean, is it, you know, maybe too soon? I mean, I know, because, you know, you see the comments online, and comments online are one thing. But I mean, if people are always concerned about things ending up in another court battle and things costing more, and it just, you know, I think people are going to be watching those next projects with more of a weathered eye. I mean, more than they originally were in the first place, given the cost. It's just,
and it's not just City Hall. You got to remember the arena downtown. Do you remember
mm-hmm.
where the city had to take it over? It was a public-private partnership, and I forget who the developers were that we got into New Stadia, that we got into a partnership with.
Yeah,
and that you know, it's difficult for the city to do major projects like that.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens, but we're out of time for today. So, Kathy Downer, thank you so much for all your time.
Thank you.
So once again, that was Ward 5 City Councilor Kathy Downer. She is the official, or one of the two official ward councilors for CFRU, since we're in her ward, or at least we would be if we were in studio, but that's another story.
Virtual, our virtual councilor.
I mean, pretty much, sorry. Yeah. Anyway, we do have to wrap up the show for this week. We hope you liked it. Stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. You can find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. The show is available to be downloaded every Monday from our website, or from the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or or you can check out my news and politics site, which you can find at GuelphPolitico.ca.
And I'm Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and for all things CFRU, of course, stay tuned to 93.3, but please check out CFRU.ca for all scheduling information and everything that's going on with us virtually these days.
All right, no more virtual jokes.
Can you virtually end it now?
I can. Well, I'm about to. Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. We'll be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for another edition of Open Sources Guelph, and we will see you then. Thank you.